right. Ecclesiastes chapter 10 here tonight. As we did in the last two chapters, we're going to just kind of survey some practical principles for our lives. Let me just remind you again that Solomon is nearing the end of his life, even as we see in chapter 12, we see his poetic description of old age. As he's getting to the end of his life, he's starting to have some regrets, but he's also doing some reflecting on life, some of the things that that he should have done. Notice it says here, first of all, in verse 1, dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. Notice the wording there, dead flies. First of all, we see something small can ruin a person's reputation for wisdom and honor. But I want you to think about some of the examples in Scripture. Even as I was doing some reading on this this afternoon, some of the kings that were mentioned, you think of David. David had a reputation for honor, for wisdom. Solomon had a reputation for wisdom. I think of Josiah and various ones. They had a reputation for wisdom. But in one bad decision, they ruined it all. Notice again, here it says, so doth a little folly, again, just like a small fly causing a stinking savor, so doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. All it takes is one moment of lack of good sense, and I can ruin everything that I've lived my life for. I think of preachers. I wish I could get some of these examples out of my head. I think of preachers that had a respected ministry. In a moment of sin, they threw everything away, their family, their ministries, everything. So again, dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. You know, you can have a life of reputation for wisdom and honor in a moment of sin, a moment of folly, ruin it everything. Again, we need to protect ourselves from folly. Another, as we continue down through this chapter, again, looking at the principle, protecting yourself from folly. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Now, I hate to ask this, but is there anyone left-handed here tonight? In Scripture, notice we see here a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. According to Bible customs, the right hand was a symbol of effectiveness. The left hand wasn't. but even today, even in our politics, we have this thought, the right and the left. You know, the right coast, the left coast. You know, the liberals versus, conservatives, all those things. But here we see a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. So again, we see here some examples that he's giving, some proverbs. Yea, also, when he that is a fool walketh by the way, speaking of his course of life, as we're living our life, we're walking through life. So again, we see here this fool is walking by the way, his wisdom faileth him, and he saith to everyone that he is a fool. What a fool I was! You know, so again, he just speaks what everybody already knows, because his wisdom has failed him. Why? Because he did not desire it. If the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. Now, there's various ideas as to what this verse has meant. In fact, I crossed off some things in my wide margin Bible, because as I was doing some more study on this, notice here he says, if the spirit of the anger, spirit of the ruler rise up against thee. All right, so I believe this is a spirit of anger rising up. He says, leave not thy place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. In other words, I believe what he's saying here is do not respond with anger. So if the spirit of the king rises up in anger, don't respond in kind. Let me remind you of what Proverbs 15 verse 1 says. Proverbs 15 verse 1 says, that a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. So, in other words, he's saying here in chapter 10, he says, you know, don't respond with anger, because all it's going to do is stir up more anger in the king. So again, if the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place. This is true for the workplace. You know, if your boss is angry, don't respond in kind, because all it's going to do is stir up more anger. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, as an error which proceedeth from the ruler. Here's this evil, this error that he's talking about. Folly is set in great dignity, and the rich sit in a low place. So, it's a bad day when the fool is set up in great dignity. I believe we see that in many cases. We see that in Hollywood. We see that in many different examples that we could say from our show from our culture. But folly is set in great dignity in many cases. The rich sit in a low place. I have seen servants upon horses. So he's giving some observations, life observations. I have seen servants upon horses and princes walking as servants upon the earth. I think of David when he was running for his life. He left the throne and he's walking. Princes are walking as servants upon the earth. He had to run for his life from his own son. Then notice here we must be careful of being victims of our own devices. He that diggeth a pit shall fall into it. And whoso breaketh an hedge, a serpent shall bite him. Now in this culture, they would often use a hedge to set a boundary or to protect, from animals getting into their property. And so what he's talking about here is somebody breaking down the hedge and crossing over into somebody else's property. Notice, whoso breaketh an hedge, a serpent shall bite him. Whoso removeth stone shall be hurt therewith. There's a couple of possibilities with that phrase. First of all, maybe an ancient building, they're removing stones off the building. Hey, I'll take this as a souvenir and chip off a rock or something. But also, very likely, it was referred to a landmark that would mark the edge of a property. Notice here he says, whoso remove the stone shall be hurt therewith. And then he says, he that cleaveth wood shall be endangered thereby. The head of the axe coming off or whatever. But again, he's talking about being a victim of our own devices. Hold your place here. Notice with me Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. Solomon mentions this type of principle a few different times. Notice here Proverbs chapter 1 verses 10 and following. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Notice again this peer pressure, this group mentality. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. Again, they are hurt by their own devices. Back in Ecclesiastes chapter 10, he again says, he that diggeth a pit shall fall into it. Whoso breaketh an hedge, a serpent shall bite him. All right, so he's digging this pit, trying to trap somebody, and he falls into the pit himself. As I was doing some reading years ago, I came across this interesting little story. Sir Robert Watson Watt was a Scotsman who invented radar. So we can thank him for the police that are... in fact, I thought about this again the other day. On Vine Street, where it's 25 miles per hour from the school over to 84th Street, they're patrolling that pretty heavily at times. They're trying to catch all these people that are going 35 and 40 through there in a 25 zone. Well, yesterday, I just saw this. There's this woman police officer. She actually was not even in her vehicle. She was actually walking out under the sidewalk. And just off to the side of the street there on Vine Street, there she's doing target practice with the radar. So again, we can thank Sir Robert Watson Watt for that device. But he was given $140,000 for his invention. That was the highest wartime award at that time. And while he was driving in Canada, he was arrested for speeding. He was caught in a radar trap, and he wrote this poem as a memory of that event. Pity Sir Robert Watson Watt, strange target of his radar plot. And thus with others, I could mention a victim of his own invention. We often are victims of our own devices, our own inventions. In fact, Solomon elsewhere says, that many are the inventions of man. So again, wisdom says I'm careful of what I allow into my life so that I'm not a victim of my own devices. Notice verse 10 then. If the iron be blunt, he do not whet the edge, sharpen the edge, then must he put to more strength. But wisdom is profitable to direct. Here we see this word picture of somebody who's got this axe, but, you know, he doesn't have time to sharpen his axe. He's just cutting away. He's chopping away. He's having to work extra hard because it's not sharpened anymore. Sometimes we have to stop and sharpen the edge of our knife. Now, personally, I've taken that as I've done some reading over the years. Personally, there's things that we need to do in our lives to make sure our life is more effective. You know, there's things that do not seem important. You know, I don't have time to stop and sharpen this axe. All right, well, then you're going to put forth more effort. Again, the wise person is going to direct himself to sharpen that edge so that he does not have to put forth more strength. So again, keep the axe or the knife sharpened. Surely the serpent will bite without enchantment, and a babbler is no better. Here we see the picture of a snake charmer. The snake in this picture, the word picture, is biting before the playing begins. So here we see the serpent is biting without enchantment, and he likens that to a babbler. A babbler is no better than a serpent that's biting before he's been enchanted. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. All right, so we see the gracious words of a wise man, but then he says the fool is going to swallow up himself. It's almost like he's destroying himself. He's consuming himself. So again, we see here again the contrast between wisdom and folly. Verse 13, the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness. Notice the beginning of his words is foolishness. All right, so you know a fool by what he says. And the end of his talk is mischievous madness. All right, so here we have the beginning and the end of it all, and it amounts to nothing of significance. Verse 14, a fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be. And what shall be after him, who can tell him? All right, so fools talk a lot. All right, so you want to know a fool, see how much they talk. They dominate the conversation, it seems. Again, we see here this statement at the end of verse 14 then. A man cannot tell what shall be, and what shall be after him, who can tell him? I believe in essence what he's saying here in verse 14 is a fool talks a lot and he thinks he knows everything. And so he's just going to keep talking whether he knows something or not. You can't know everything, but yet the fool thinks he does, and so he's got to tell you what he knows. Verse 15, the labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city. Notice fools can't figure out the simplest of things. Like, for example, that everything with design requires a designer. You think about the foolishness of evolution. How stupid. Oh, there's this explosion, and all of a sudden everything has order and design. Notice again here, the fool cannot figure out the simplest of things. The labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city. He can't see the obvious. He can't figure out how to even get to the city. Oh yeah, follow the road and you'll go to the city. Woe unto thee, O land, when thy king is a child, and thy princes eat in the morning. Now, obviously, the exception to this is the godly king of the Old Testament that honored God. But notice again, woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child. Notice he's immature, and thy princes eat in the morning. They're undisciplined. Instead of carrying out justice and carrying out their responsibilities, they're spending the morning feasting. Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles. There's some nobility about their leaders. And thy princes eat in due season, for strength and not for drunkenness. Again, wise leaders will benefit the nation. Let's be praying for our nation. Let's be praying for our leaders. Some of the decisions that our president, our new president, needs to make. It says, by much slothfulness, the building decayeth. And through idleness of the hands, the house droppeth through. You see here a word picture of an old rundown farm that's been abandoned. You know, year after year, you drive by that thing, and it gets worse and worse. And there's times I think, why don't they just burn that down? You know, what an eyesore at times. But again, neglect causes these things to decay and drop through. Notice with me, Proverbs. Proverbs, I forgot the reference. Proverbs 24. Proverbs 24, verses 30 and following. Solomon gives another principle of wisdom here in the book of Proverbs. Says here in Proverbs 24, verse 30, I went by the field of the slothful, and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. Notice he's learning a lesson from this. I looked upon it and received instruction. Now, I take it from what we see in the book of Ecclesiastes and the book of 1 Kings that Solomon was a hard worker. I mean, he put forth great effort. He was diligent in everything that he did. Maybe this is why, because he took a lesson from this. He had a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. We could say armed robbery. Now, every once in a while, I stop by a house that I'm thinking, wow, this place needs a little help. So we're talking about somebody who's actually living on this property. We're not talking about an abandoned property. So again, we see here, by much slothfulness, the building decayeth. And through idleness of the hands, the house droppeth through. Finally, the roof caves in. Why? Because of neglect. Verse 19, a feast is made for laughter, and wine maketh merry, but money answereth all things. Money to fund their extravagance. Because we see in the context here, feast, wine making merry. So we see here this party, this feasting, money answereth all things. Some people think that money is the answer to everything in life. Notice again the foolishness of that. Curse not the king, no, not in thy thought. And curse not the rich in thy bedchamber. For a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. So what's he saying here? Don't curse the king. I can't believe that president we have. You know, there's some people who need to listen to this, but at the same time, how close did we come to cursing our former king? Here he says, don't curse the king. Why? Because somehow he's going to find out. Notice, curse not the rich in thy bedchamber. Boy, they've got the life, don't they? Don't curse the rich in your bedchamber, in your bedroom. Why? Because this bird of the air is going to carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. I think an Old Testament example of 2 Kings chapter 6. Remember, the king of Syria was going to conquer Israel? And all of a sudden they realized that Israel knew their plans. And so the king of Syria says, who's on the side of the king of Israel? To which somebody said, no one, king. No one. It's Elijah who's telling all the secrets. So again, we see here the example of what we say sometimes is mentioned to others that we've cursed. Also chapter 11 then. Not only in chapter 10 should we protect ourselves from folly. Notice that in chapter 11 we must give generously. Here he says, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to seven and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. Now, I want you to notice the principle that he mentions here. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Now, from what I understand, this is an expression from a grain trade of a seaport town. So as we see here, this grain is shipped out. They're casting the bread, the grain, upon many waters. And they're shipping it out, hoping it's going to return. Notice it says here, it will return, you shall find it after many days. Now, first of all, I notice here that this return is not immediate. It may take months and years. Even as we think about the example of investing and diversifying our investments. Notice we cast our bread upon the waters, it will come back after many days. Sometimes it takes a long time to see a return on our investment. Now, we think about giving here. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Now, there are some people who think, well, yeah, if I start giving to the Lord, then I'm going to start getting this hundredfold return. That's not what the Bible says. As you give, it will return back to you. In fact, let's look at Luke chapter 6 and verse 38. I had that verse written down in my Bible here. Let's see what Jesus actually says there in that passage. Luke 6, verse 38. Jesus is sharing some principles here. He says in verse 38, give, and it shall be given unto you. And here's how he describes this. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together, and running over shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. All right, so I use my glass here for an illustration. So that's what he's saying here. Give, and it shall be given to you. All right, so as I give, then it's going to be given to me. Notice how he describes this. First of all, it's going to be a good measure. All right, so it's going to be a good measure. All right, but then he says it's going to be pressed down. All right, so it's going to be filled up, and then it's going to be pressed down. Not only that, but it's going to be like a cereal box, shaken together so that it'll settle down. Shaken together and then running over. But notice he says, shall men give into your bosom? For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. All right, so if you give a teaspoon, it's going to be measured back to you that way. If you give with a shovel, it's going to be measured back to you that way. So again, with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. God supplies, I noticed in that passage, through people. You know, it might be an unexpected bonus at work or a raise or something like that. So again, we see that God wants to supply everything that we need. Notice there it says here, again, in Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1, it says, cast thy bread upon the waters. Now, we see in verse 2 then that we are to diversify. Notice, cast it upon the waters, sending it out different directions. And again, this is a good principle for investments as well. Don't put all your money into one basket. You know, all your eggs in one basket is the same. Give a portion to seven and also to eight. For thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. In other words, give in a variety of ways. Why? Because you don't know if someday you're going to need the same gift in return. As I was doing some reading years ago, I came across an example of this. A church helped a man who had fallen into hard times. They helped him. He had lost his job and was going through a rough time in life. Later on, that same church received a very generous gift from that man. After his life had been turned around once again and he was very prosperous financially, that man had not forgotten what that church had done in his life. And so a generous gift was sent that way. Notice again, give a portion to seven and also to eight. Diversify your gifts among many. Why? Because you may need help someday. But again, this principle applies to investments also. For thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth, evil or misfortune. Consider also we must remain flexible with things that we cannot change in life. Notice verse 3. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. Now, notice it says, if the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. We used to go over to the window to see what the weather was like. Now we have weather apps, we have the weather channel, all those things. Notice what he's talking about here. You know, if the clouds be full of rain, they're going to empty themselves upon the earth. What's going to happen is going to happen. So we have no control over that. But how many times do we get all bent out of shape because it's raining? You know, in the spring, we need some rain. You know, it's pretty dry. Notice again, if the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. What's going to happen is going to happen. So why do we get all upset about it? You know, remain flexible with the things that we cannot change. I cannot change the weather. In fact, I've heard it said that if God answered everyone's prayers, we would never get any rain. You think about that. Oh, Lord, please don't let it rain today so we can enjoy our picnic. Oh, Lord, don't let it rain today so I can go do my deliveries without... You know. Again, all of these things. We would never get any rain if God answered everyone's prayers. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. Then he gives another example. The end of verse 3. If the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. Now, as I was doing some reading on this, this man mentioned philosophers, philosophy class, talking about, if the tree falls in the forest, will it make a noise? Of course it's going to make a noise, it's just nobody heard it. But notice that what he says here, if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, the place where the tree falleth, there shall be. You can't change where it's falling. The tree is falling in the forest, you can't change what happens. Notice again, there's in verse 4 then, there's no perfect conditions. He that observeth the wind shall not sow. Oh, it's kind of windy today. I think I'm going to wait to plant my crop. And he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. Oh, it's kind of cloudy today. I guess I'm not going to plant the crop today either. Notice the result of that, he's not going to reap. how bent out of shape we get over things we cannot change. For example, I don't know if your favorite team won for the Super Bowl or not, but in 2 years, nobody's really going to care about that. The end score, it was the end score. Now, I know our son, Justin, was excited, you know, because, you know, New England came back and won big. He was happy. But he didn't know until the very end he was going to be happy. We get all bent out of shape over things that we cannot change. You know, sports scores and all these things. Again, Solomon says, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. So why not be flexible? And again, verse 4, there's no perfect conditions. So why do we wait for these perfect conditions to do things in life? Again, we are so preoccupied with unchangeable things of life. We're controlled by the weather forecast, it seems. Verse 5, as thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child. Notice we have no control over that. Even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. God knows everything. He says you don't know everything, so stop getting so upset about things you don't know. Stop trying to figure out everything in life. He says in verse 6, in the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand. For thou knowest not whether shall prosper, either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. So again, he says here, don't be obsessed with the things of life, the things that are out of your control. Instead, just go do your work. In the morning sow thy seed, in the evening withhold not thy hand, for thou knowest not one of those may prosper, or maybe both. So again, remain flexible with the things you cannot change in life. Continue putting forth effort. Last of all, notice verses 7 through 10. Live life without regret. Truly the light is sweet. Light there, I think, is speaking of life. All right, so I still have life. I have light. Even as Jesus said, you know, he was the light of the world is the light of men. Truly the light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. All right, I'm still alive under the sun, he's talking about. I'm still alive. But if a man live many years and rejoice in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. Notice here again, he's talking about growing older. He says, light is sweet. It's a pleasant thing to behold the sun, be able to, you know, any day above ground is a good day, as the saying goes. But if a man live many years and rejoice in them all, yet remember, again, the days of darkness are coming. Someone has said, youth is such a wonderful thing, it's a shame to waste it on young people. Again, we all are growing older. Even the youngest of us are growing older here tonight. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. What's he talking about here? Rejoice and enjoy your youth. As we all know, our younger years are slipping by, right? He says, enjoy life. Let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth. Walk in the ways of thine heart. Follow the impulses of what you see best. Now listen carefully to what he's saying here. Walk in the ways of thine heart and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou. But remember something. As you make those choices, as you live your life, remember that for all these things, God will bring thee into judgment. Hebrews 9:27 says, it is appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. All right, so Solomon says, live your life. Enjoy life. But don't forget to live your life in such a way that you don't regret it at the end. So in other words, don't enjoy youth at the expense of later. I remember reading a book. I don't remember the title of it now. But we had our sons read it. We picked up this book, and it was about the years from 17 to 27. As I was reading through this book, it emphasizes the fact that most major decisions are made between the years of 17 and 27. What do you think about that? Where you go to college, maybe who you end up marrying, the career choices, all of those things. Yet the book points out also that between the ages of 17 and 27, that's when most of the bad decisions are made. that wreck and ruin a person's life in many cases. Between 17 and 27. Again, all of these things between the ages of 17 and 27. So this is good counsel for someone, especially in these years. Notice it says here in verse 10. Therefore, in light of judgment day, therefore remove sorrow from thy heart. All right, so get rid of depression. Don't live a depressed life. Remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh. Remove evil. Why? For childhood and youth are vanity. It's vain. Notice with me 2 Corinthians chapter 7. 2 Corinthians chapter 7. I believe I mentioned this a few weeks ago. In the context of separation, in the context of a promise where God wants to be our Father, have a Father relationship with us, it says in 2 Corinthians 7 verse 1, having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Again, Solomon says, remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh. 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. Verses 15 and following. 2 Timothy chapter 2. Of course, this is written to a young man, young minister, young man of God, even as the title is given to him in these epistles. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. All right, so we need to study. All right, so he tells this young man to study. Not just to study the Bible, but notice, study to show thyself approved unto God. Notice the emphasis on work there. A workman that needeth not to be ashamed, then rightly dividing the word of truth. But then he says, but shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness. And their word will eat as doth a canker, as a cancer or gangrene, of whom is Hymenaeus and Philetus, who concerning the truth have erred, saying that the resurrection is past already, and overthrow the faith of some. Nevertheless, the foundation of God standeth sure, having this seal, the Lord knoweth them that are his. Excuse me. The Lord knoweth them that are his, and let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity. Again, what did Solomon say? Put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. So again, the Lord knoweth them that are his. Let everyone that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity. And it says, but in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, from the things that cause dishonor, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified, and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. And then he says, flee also youthful lusts, but follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace, with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Notice again the emphasis here. So are we a vessel unto honor or unto dishonor? Again, Solomon says, put away evil from thy flesh. Paul says it again this way, flee also youthful lusts, but instead follow after these things, righteousness, doing what is right, faith, charity, which is God's kind of love, peace with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Notice even who we hang around with, hanging out with people, spending time with people who have a pure heart. So, principles, so that we do not go to the end of our life and say, I wish I had. Oh, how I wish I had done something different. How many adults, I think our young people need to understand this, how many adults could say, oh, I wish I had never done this or that? Solomon says there's ways that you can end your life without regret. Now, I think Solomon probably wished he could have said the same thing at the end of his life. But as he was doing some reflecting on his life, he's getting to be an old man now, and he says, what a waste. Oh, the things that I should have done differently.